What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Sharp 600 brought to you by Covers.com. My name is Joe Fortenbaugh. This is episode 95 of the podcast. Thank you so much for your continued support, for checking in on us today. We greatly appreciate it. Speaking of great, the great Rob Perez, who gave us the Nuggets over 45 and a half wins on the season. He's going to join us in just a few minutes to break down the state of the NBA. What's happened, what's going to happen, and everything in between. But before we get to Rob, I'm going to throw out two picks for this weekend. Pick number one, lay it with New Orleans, -6.5 against the Portland Trail Blazers. Dame Lillard and the Blazers are cooked. They're down 0-3, and they ain't coming back. Lillard is hitting just 32% of his shots in this series. The backcourt defense on behalf of New Orleans has been absolutely suffocating. The Pelicans are peaking at just the right time. That doesn't mean they're getting by the Warriors, but it does mean they wrap in a big way on Saturday. And speaking of 4-0 sweeps, go ahead and lay the 6.5 with the Warriors Sunday in San Antonio. The Spurs, look, if the Blazers are cooked, the Spurs are filleted at this point in the season. They've got nothing left. They lack firepower. The best shots they've given the Warriors, it's just not enough. And not only that, if you can find a line for it, I'll give you a third one here. If you can find a line for it, one of the best bets in the business, and I've been playing this off and on for 4 years, Golden State in the third quarter. Nobody comes out of the half like the Golden State Warriors. I don't know what Steve Kerr does with these guys, but for the last 4 years, they have been the absolute best in the business at kicking ass in the third quarter. So lay it 6.5 on Saturday with New Orleans over Portland. Lay it 6.5 with the Warriors over the Spurs game 4 Sunday. And if you can find a third quarter line, bet the third quarter line, Warriors over Spurs.
Pay that man his money.
He's the undisputed king of NBA Twitter, co-host of Buckets, which you can find on Cycle at Twitter. They're at Bicycle. And he on Twitter is at world_wide_Wob. It's the great Rob Perez making his return to the Sharp 600. Rob, as always, it's a pleasure, and I thank you for your time. I also thank you for coming on the program months ago before the season started and giving us the Denver Nugget over 45 and a half wins. It took us 81 games, but we got there, dude.
Yeah, I guess W's are W's. It certainly applies here, no matter which way you get them. I am not going to flaunt how easy this pick was because it required a serious winning streak to end the season. But the Nuggets did prove to me that they were, at the very least, a playoff contender in a very stacked Western Conference. I would have loved to see them make the playoffs because hell knows Minnesota doesn't stand a chance in hell. But you know what? Thank you, Nuggets, for getting us home. That was a sweat, and I enjoyed a nice cocktail on you guys.
Dude, absolutely. The only thing that's coming up faster than the Nuggets did late in the season is your show, Buckets. I remember years ago when we first started following each other on Twitter, and you've always, always been an entertaining follow from an NBA perspective. But, dude, season one of Buckets was last year. Season two taking place this year. I mean, tell me about the rise of this thing, because this, I don't know how it started, but it's catching fire, man. I mean, it's a really good show.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's what I always say about it is we went from pizza rolls to primetime because the first ever, not episode of Buckets, but my first Periscope ever was just me cooking pizza rolls, drunk, 3 a.m., struck out at the bar, and I was like, 50 people are watching this, you know, live. I'm like, this could be a tool I can use in the future. And then when I did it a second time, 150, maybe I'll start talking about basketball and some other things. You fast forward a couple of years, and that couple hundred turned into tens of thousands, and all of a sudden we've got some traction here on a show that isn't so much about X's and O's, but more so the basketball culture. You know, the mantra we use is getting buckets isn't just a basketball culture, it's a lifestyle. So we apply buckets to all things life on and off the court. Now we see a lot of things that happen from like pettiness to disrespect that happen on the court, and it has evolved into something that is now being simulcasted on ESPN Live's Twitter platform, and we've gone as far as getting Kevin Durant to do an interview with us. So it has come a long way in the past couple of years, for sure, going from pizza rolls to Kevin Durant, but certainly thankful for all the support.
Bro, let me put it in perspective. I host the morning show on 95.7 The Game in the Bay Area. We're the Warriors flagship. I've never spoken with Kevin Durant on my show. You've already had him on your show. You know what I'm saying? That's a huge get.
Yeah, it still hasn't hit me yet that I got Kevin Durant, and I had the ability to pretty much ask him whatever you want. It wasn't just a typical post-game kind of tell us about the game. I was pretty much it was a blank slate to get the real questions that I want answered, and it's just part of the culture that we built with the show. We're not 60 minutes by any means. We're not looking to expose anyone, but we are certainly looking to bring light to stories and topics of unique ways of watching the game. And at this point, I think a lot of players, executives like Jeannie Buss, personalities, you know, with Cassidy and other ones like Chris and Ledlow have all seen that. And it's kind of just snowballed to this point.
Let's talk about this when you mention NBA players getting disrespected on the court, because you've got so many cool features when it comes to that. This happened last night, Thursday night. What was more disrespectful? Drew Holiday taunting Jokic following the Anthony Davis dunk, or Justice Winslow stomping Joel Embiid's face mask?
Well, I think there's a difference there. I think it was Nurkic with the Trailblazers there. I miss Jokic too, man.
Yeah,
I wish he was involved
pre-trade
in the playoffs. I know he's stuck in my mind too.
I'm pre-trade for some reason. All this Nuggets talk.
And Jokic got him traded out of town. But so for those that missed it last night, Anthony Davis threw down this monster one-handed tip slam, left-handed too, and Nurkic is a 7-foot, almost 300-pound, you know, massive Bosnian dude, and Davis wiped him off the screen, and you'd figure like, oh, that was an awesome play. Drew Holiday stands there, points in his face like I'm watching someone on And1 mixtape that just got crossed off the screen instead of running back on defense. That is as disrespectful as it gets. But then you have Justice Winslow in Miami, who we all know Joel Embiid was wearing that mask. He walks out of his way to stomp on this thing to try and break it, and he even picks it up and kind of like tries to rip it in half and realizes this is not going to happen and just gets rid of it. That's more petty than disrespectful, but that is also playoff gamesmanship. If you're going to wear a mask and you're going to drop it on the floor, I don't blame you. I'm going to stomp on that thing too. You're their best player. They don't raise banners for sportsmanship. They raise banners for titles.
I love it. Let's stick with the Sixers. Up 2-1 against the Heat. They stole back home court with that Game 3 win. How far can they go in the playoffs? What do you think the likelihood is that the process could end up winning the Eastern Conference?
You just said it. The ceiling for the Sixers is the NBA Finals, and I can't believe we're saying that, but it's absolutely true. Now, their path to getting there is a little bit of a love triangle. So in the NBA, matchups are even bigger than they are in college hoops. It's a bracket-style format. It all comes down to who you're playing. The love triangle that exists in the Eastern Conference is you've got the Toronto Raptors at the apex of the triangle. They're the one seed. They cannot beat the Cavs. They've proven all year on this big stage that LeBron's still got real estate in their head. The Cavs can't beat the Sixers because the Cavs don't have anyone on that team, even if they put dudes on top of each other's shoulders, that could guard Joel Embiid. So you've got the Sixers with an advantage over the Cavs. You've got the Cavs with an advantage over the Raptors. And the Raptors have proved they are the one team that could throw guys at Ben Simmons, at Joel Embiid. They are 12 deep. They're so deep that sometimes Casey goes to the bench too much in the playoffs. You should only have a 7-8-man rotation. He's going to these 9-10 rotations for extended amounts of time. That's a blessing and a curse. But if there's any squad out there that can neutralize Joel Embiid, you're not going to stop him the same way you're not going to stop LeBron, but you can throw Ibaka, you can throw Valanciunas, you can throw these Bebe Nogueiras at him, and they're just deep. So the ceiling is the NBA Finals. They won't win a game off the Warriors, but they could make the NBA Finals, and I'm starting to get that 2012, I think, was the Oklahoma City Thunder team when Durant, Westbrook, and Harden were a little too young to be there, but they were so good that they made it anyway. I'm starting to get that feeling with the 76ers.
LeBron had a monster performance in Game 2 to even up the series, but despite the huge leads Cleveland enjoyed in that game, they still only ended up winning by 3. Do you see the Cavs ultimately getting past Indiana, and what's their ceiling this season?
Yeah, this is so tough just because this is probably the LeBron James team that is the second least talented team from that 07 squad that had, like, Anthony Parker, Sasha Pavlovich, God bless his soul, Zeljina Sergauskas. This squad is on par with in terms of talent with that 07 team. But here's the difference, is Indiana all around is probably a better team in terms of players, positioning, depth. Miles Turner is the best player on that team, and no one really talks about it, and the Cavs don't have anyone that can match up with him. But what do we always come back to? They have LeBron James, and what he proved in the first half, regardless if Oladipo got two quick fouls or not, is that when he decides to be LeBron James and this game is over, this game is usually over. Now, he usually doesn't have to go to that well until the Eastern Conference Finals, sometimes a game six in a second round. We've never seen him have to pull this out of his bag this early. So while he single-handedly could pull off this series, I just don't know, just as of being a fellow human being, I think that's what LeBron James is. I don't know if he can put up those performances for 15 straight games to save this Cavs team that couldn't guard its own shadow.
Western Conference, James Harden, MVP frontrunner, and the Rockets lead Minnesota 2-0. I was holding out hope, being based here in the Bay Area, that somehow the Timberwolves might take a game off of Houston in this series, but Karl Anthony Towns, for as much talent as he's shown early in his career, he looks lost in this series.
He does. We have a really small sample size. It's two games on the road against the best team in the NBA. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because we've seen how good he is. But I implore Karl Anthony Towns, you are so good at basketball and you are so physically dominating, to go to the block and get the ball. Stop going to the running to the corner. I know that's what the NBA has become. You're good enough that you should be demanding the ball on the block and dominating the same way Joel Embiid is. Joel Embiid is taking those three-pointers when he's stepping into it in transition. It's not a designed offense. He's taking it when it's opportunistic for him. I implore Karl Anthony Towns to do the same exact thing. Go down to the block. Demand the basketball from Jimmy Butler. It will make Jimmy Butler better. It'll make Andrew Wiggins better when teams have to collapse to you because you're better than everyone else on the Rockets in terms of big guys. Capella's been great, but he can't hold a candle to you when it comes to talent. So you know what? I don't know if this is as much Thibodeau in his offensive system as much as it is Karl Anthony Towns, but this can be easily be fixed if Thibodeau says, get this man the basketball, we'll figure out the rest later.
How surprised are you by the fact that Anthony Davis and the Pelicans have jumped out to a 3-0 lead over 3-seeded Portland?
I'm going to say I'm not that surprised because Anthony Davis, if we remember correctly, was supposed to be the heir apparent to LeBron James as the next best basketball player on planet Earth. He has been hampered by injuries. That's what's limited him to this point, but the talent has not suffered. And now that Anthony Davis has been unleashed, part of it is because maybe DeMarcus Cousins went down and it freed up Anthony Davis. DeMarcus Cousins is a great player, but he demands the basketball and he needs a lot of touches, which means Anthony Davis isn't getting those. When you replace DeMarcus Cousins with someone like Mirotic, that all he does is supplement what Anthony Davis does great, I'm not surprised to watch arguably what might be the best player in the NBA by the time the playoffs is over, depending on how that series with the Warriors goes. Anthony Davis is going to be the best player in the league at some point. So am I shocked to see the Blazers and Lillard and CJ McCollum get locked up? No, because they're going up against first-team all-defense in Rajon Rondo and Jrue Holiday. Playoff Rondo shows up every April unless he's playing for the Dallas Mavericks. Mavericks fans, I feel for you. You got to be so salty like you're watching an ex have more fun with someone that's cuter and richer than you. I get that. But Rondo and Jrue Holiday have showed up as the most terrifying defensive backcourt in the NBA by far, and all that's done is help Anthony Davis.
All right, two-pronged scenario here. If the Warriors finish business against the Spurs, if the Pelicans finish their business against the Blazers, they'll meet in the next round. How difficult can the Pelicans make Golden State's life with Steph versus without Steph? Those two scenarios, because we're still waiting to see what's going to happen with Steph. It looks like a six-week timetable is going to take it to maybe May 4th. Perhaps he misses the first two games. Maybe he misses the whole series. How's it play out if there's no Steph? How's it play out if Steph does play?
Well, that's a huge difference. So this year, of all years, Steph has proved that he has become the most important player on this team. I would argue in years past it was Draymond Green. He was the X factor. He was the glue. He did everything to make the engine run. Kevin Durant may be the most talented player on the Warriors, but Steph is now the most important. There's a huge difference there. So to answer your question, with Steph, my hot take, everyone has to have a hot take that you can go to war with.
Yes, absolutely.
My hot take is that the Warriors will sweep through the playoffs because I assume Steph is going to be back in the second round. So if Steph is back, I think it's going to be really similar to when the Pelicans played the Warriors a couple years ago. Those games were real close. There was no rolling over those guys. They had to come back late in the fourth quarter, I think, even in Oracle. So I do expect some real close games just because of how good that backcourt has been, plus Anthony Davis. But I still see 4-0 sweep with Steph Curry in the lineup. Now, if he's not, that changes everything. Sean Livingston has been great. Every time he touches the ball in the mid-post, it's going in. There's been no problems there. But the difference is pace changes. You can't stretch the floor and have five guys defending these Warriors 32 feet from the basket. You can slump off of Sean Livingston and help with the KDs and the Clays in the corner. You can't do that with Steph because then he'll kick it and it's over and he can beat you off the dribble. So it's just a completely different team that is still the best team in the NBA, but they grind it out differently. And I don't want to say they look like the Virginia Cavaliers in college basketball in terms of pace, but they slow down, and when you watch them, they don't get nearly as many open looks simply because Steph Curry isn't on the floor. I still think they win either way, but they would definitely surrender a game or two if Steph isn't there.
If the Warriors get through the Pelicans and Steph's back, you don't see Houston giving them any trouble?
I don't, because I'm gonna go to the grave with this. You can't out-Warriors the Warriors. You just stop trying to beat the Warriors at their own game. And that's exactly what Houston does. They're a dynamic offensive squad that is built on D'Antoni's reputation as the best offensive mind in this league. That's great. They're going to launch threes. They're going to five out, let James Harden spin. It's not going to work against the Warriors, who are as good as their offense is. You can say they're equal, but the Warriors play defense, and they have two arguably defensive players of the year on that team. So they will make up for it on the defensive end. The more you push the ball and try and get shots up and run the Warriors out of the gym means you're giving those guys more offensive possessions. The only way to beat the Warriors is limit the amount of times that they have the opportunity to get that ball in the hoop, and the Rockets do the exact opposite of that.
How long do you see the Utah-OKC series lasting, and who emerges as the winner?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I think this might go the distance. I'm going to say it goes seven. I'm really, really low on Oklahoma City, and I'm sure I'll catch some flack for that when they ultimately do win. But I can't watch this team play basketball. I really can't. It's either they're too selfish or they're too unselfish. You've got Westbrook looking at playoff P, being like, okay, playoff P, it's your turn to go dominate. And every single offensive possession seems like they give it to a superstar who dribbles around for 6 seconds and has to get a really, really difficult bucket. And when the NBA is developed into this game of 100-plus possessions per playoff game, you can't rely on Paul George. He's going to get you buckets, but he can't do it every single time. He can't go and get you an easy layup. You have to give him easy opportunities from time to time to get points. And I haven't seen that from the Thunder all season, from day one through now. It's either Westbrook with these 18-foot pull-ups, jacking 40 shots a game. I haven't seen a flex offense. I haven't seen a horn screen, an elevator screen of any kind, any offensive set. It's just dribbling the ball up, calling a pick and roll, and giving it to a star in the corner with 8 seconds left on the shot clock. And for that reason, I don't think they make it out of the first round. I really don't.
Two-parter to close this thing out. Number one, who do you see beating who in the finals? And number two, from the NBA's perspective, what is the ultimate ratings bonanza for the finals?
Oh, I like that question. So I'll say this, because I said it was all about matchups. And in the Eastern Conference, the Raptors are going to get the Cavs, if I'm not mistaken, in the second round. So by my own philosophy, the Cavs will advance through Toronto and face the 76ers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Based on my logic, that means we're going to see the Sixers in the finals this year. So if we have Sixers, Warriors, in terms of ratings, I don't know what people want to see. Do they want to see the fourth installment of the Rocky series? You know, that was the best one, right? That was Drago versus Rocky in the USSR. This might be the best one of them all. That wouldn't be the case because it would be another potential 4-0 sweep because the Cavs are simply not that good. Watching the 76ers and Embiid just being such a lightning rod for content, Ben Simmons being such a lightning rod in terms of, like, play, and also he does his own social media thing too. The 76ers are easily the second best way if you're like a ratings, you know, someone that relies on high numbers and such. I think the Sixers are a significantly better team to have there, other than like the Toronto Raptors. The Celtics, you know, without their superstars, aren't going to check that box. For me, it's 76ers, Warriors is without a doubt the sexiest NBA Finals matchup.
He's the undisputed king of NBA Twitter, co-host of Buckets, which you can find on Cycle, at Bicycle on Twitter. We have that all listed in the bio of this pod episode. Also, he's on Twitter at world_wide_wob. Rob Perez joining us on the Sharp 600. Rob, it's always a blast getting to talk to you, my friend. Have fun. Enjoy the games. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time.
Going to be up 500 by midnight.
Yeah, Vegas!
That's a wrap for episode 95 of the Sharp 600. Shout out to Rob Perez for spending some time with us today to break down the state of the NBA. It is always a blast to speak with that guy and to watch his rise as he is the undisputed king of NBA Twitter. Check him out. The Twitter handle is listed in the bio of this pod. Thanks to you for your continued support of the project. If you haven't done so already, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. It would be much appreciated. NBA draft specials, Kentucky Derby specials, all coming up next week. But for now, have a great weekend, everybody. Be well, and best of luck.